More Idaho Matters now from the studios of Boise State Public Radio News. Okay, this summer, neuroscientist, TikTok star, and also New York Times bestselling author, Allie Hazelwood is back with her third highly anticipated STEMinutes romance, Love Theoretically. We are so thrilled to have Allie join us now to talk more about this. Allie, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Okay, before we get into this latest book, can we just talk a little bit about you first? Because I asked that question because, as I just mentioned, I mean, you are a neuroscientist. You are a TikTok star. So can we start back with your interest in becoming a neuroscientist? Was this always something that fascinated you?
I think that I was always leaning toward the science part of, everything, actually. I don't know that I fully knew what neuroscience was as I was growing up, but I think that once I realized that what the brain was and what it did, which was kind of late for me because in my high school, I went to high school in Italy, we didn't really have a lot of, you know, just education on what neuroanatomy was. But I remember in college, once I knew what neuroscience was and what cognitive neuroscience were, I just sort of, yeah, I really wanted to become a neuroscientist.
And then you wrote as well, right? I mean, you really were like a fan fiction writer to begin with, correct?
Yeah, that's true. So originally I was writing because, you know, I was in grad school and that was very stressful, and writing fan fiction, reading fan fiction, just generally participating within the fandom community was a very nice way for me to decompress and de-stress, because, you know, the environment, the grad school environment is can be so overwhelming. And it was just nice to have a community that didn't have anything to do with academia that I could sort of be myself in. And then it went from, you know, writing fan fiction to writing original stories. And then, you know, it became publishing.
Oh, but I mean, when we talk it became publishing, we should be really clear that you, I mean, I think it's fair to say became like this overnight sensation, because your debut novel called The Love Hypothesis, it was released in September of 2021. So not even 2 years ago. And they had to order a second printing in less than 24 hours after the book went on sale. That is incredible. I mean, did you have any inkling when you wrote this book that it would truly explode like this?
No. So the thing of publishing is that it's that success in publishing is a huge combination of just luck and timing, and, you know, luck and timing mixed together. Really, I had no idea. I was just very lucky. What happened with my book is that I think it was a mix of several factors. One was that it was the middle of the pandemic and people were really excited about romance novels and, you know, anything that might be just, you know, something with a happy ending, something that was sure to be uplifting. So that was part of it. And then I was very lucky because my book was a selection for the Book of the Month Club. And so it kind of ended up being on a lot of people's radars. And then after that, you know, a lot of TikTokers who are actual TikTok stars, because really it's not really about me, you know, it's not authors who are promoting their work on TikTok. It's the TikTokers, the readers who do that. And they just sort of liked the book and they really made it popular. So I had no idea. And it was really all thanks to them.
So let's talk about this new book. It's called Love Theoretically. Give us a brief synopsis of the book.
So the book is about Elsie, who is an adjunct professor currently interviewing for the job of her dreams, which is a tenure track professorship at MIT. She's a physicist, and she wants to have a job that has more security and that pays better than the one that she currently has, because first of all, she doesn't have any benefits, and Elsie is type 1 diabetic, which means that she really needs health insurance. But her current job is, you know, being an adjunct in academia is just all over the place. You don't have any guarantee that you're going to have a contract the following year. You're paid very little. So, you know, she wants a better job. And everything depends on the interview that she's walking into. But when the interview process starts, she realizes that one of the scientists that is on the hiring committee is someone she knows from her past life. So for one, this person is the guy who once wrote a scathing article that ruined her mentor's career. And and also he happens to be the older brother of the man that she has been fake dating. And that is because in her spare time, Elsie, who makes very little money in academia, has to fake date men, which means that, you know, she's pretending to be their girlfriend, so that well, for several different reasons. In Greg's case, who is the younger brother of you know, the main love interest of the book, it's because he just wants to get his family off his back, and he wants them to stop trying to set him up with people.
Okay, so here's what what really stands out to me about all of the novels that you've written. As I mentioned, these are called STEMinist romance. So STEM as in, you know, science, technology, engineering, math. And you know, in it, and it, and what I love about that is this is not only is it an underrepresented field you know, careers, right? Where there's not as many women in these fields, but you really just go headlong into that and put these female characters in these STEM careers. You talk about really that agony and ecstasy of being in academia. And it's not your kind of typical, you know, romance novel because of who these women are. And I would assume that goes back to in a way, you know, your lived experience as a neuroscientist.
Absolutely. I know, I wouldn't say that my books are any different from, you know, other romance novels that are published because, you know, there have been several other authors who have written about main characters who are in STEM. For example, Helen Hoang's The Kiss Quotient, a very popular, very good rom-com about a woman who's, you know, a data scientist, basically. And, you know, The One in My Heart by Sherry Thomas, the main character is a material scientist. So I really don't think I'm doing anything new here. I think we sort of go back to what, you know, the timing and the luck. But generally, I would say that romance traditionally has had a lot of, you know, female main characters who are very good at what they do and who are very successful within professional settings, and that, you know, they can have it all. They can be amazing high-powered lawyers, like in Jasmine Guillory's books, and at the same time, they can find love. So I think the only thing that's new about what I've read is that the publisher, my publisher, really leaned into the marketing using the word STEMinist, which really all it means is, you know, about women in STEM. So that's kind of, I would say that that's what is newest compared to other books, just the fact that the book is set within a STEM setting has been highly publicized, and it's used as an asset to sell the book.
Well, and it works. So
I am very glad it does.
So what was your, what was the most fun part of writing this book? I mean, did you happen to feel, you know, connected to Elsie in any way in regards to her career or choices that she was making? Where does that come from?
I mean, absolutely. I have several things in common with her, actually. I also went through a faculty search. So I was, you know, applying for faculty jobs. I think in the year before I was writing this book, because I went from being a postdoc. So I was originally a grad student and then a postdoc. And then that's when you start interviewing for faculty jobs. And that is a very stressful process. I really feel like I feel like maybe people would read the book and think that I have been dramatic about how unpleasant a process a faculty search is, but I swear it's truly it's a grueling. It lasts for a long time. It feels like everything hinges on every single thing that you say and do. So it was really fun to sort of put all that angst that I had bottled up inside me during my own hiring process and like just put it on page. I generally also, Elsie is someone who's struggling with the two facets of being a professor. So on the one hand, she knows she's a very strong researcher, but she doesn't know whether she's a good teacher. And I think that's something that's pretty common with academics. We are trained to be researchers and we are trained to be good at, you know, our specific field, but we don't really get a whole lot of support when it comes to learning to, you know, educate and to teach our subjects. And so that is definitely something that I was feeling myself quite strongly while I was writing the book.
You know, it's interesting though. I think you did that so well, and I don't think you were over dramatic about this at all, explaining this process or what it's like to try to get a tenure track. And I say that because one of my husband's best friends from high school is a professor. And you know, and funny, he was here visiting recently, and we had a conversation about how he doesn't want to do the research part anymore. That doesn't interest him. What he wants to do, what he loves to do, is teaching. And it's almost like, does he, you know, kind of flip his whole life up and end to just be able to teach? And I think sometimes if you're not in academia or you don't maybe know anyone in that, you really don't understand the kind of pressure that there is to, even once you have a tenured position, are you going to blow all that up to just go be a teacher?
Yes, it's very hard. It's very difficult. There is also this idea, if you are an academic, it feels to me that there is a lot of pressure to put academia before everything else. And for example, as a scientist, once I got my PhD, I could have decided to go into industry and, you know, work for some kind of tech company, for example, or I could have stayed in academia. And it seems to me like there is a sometimes unspoken pressure to stay in academia and keep on producing research. It feels like that is the career you should want and everything else is less than. And this is, you know, from an outsider's point of view, you know, industry pays better and it has like way more humane hours. It's, say it's a better job, but like, because you are in the environment of academia and all the people around you are academics and sort of tell you that it's better if you stay in academia, it gets a little hard to decide what you really want. So it's a challenge.
Yeah. Well, I think you do such a great job in this book with the struggles, and the characters are so great. So I just want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us about the new book and your process as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.